Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, y'all. Welcome back to a Saturday, April 30th, 2022 edition here on the Chase Thomas Podcast, where I am still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, coming to you live from Knoxville, Tennessee. Hope you guys have had a great start to your weekend thus far. Jam-packed show for you guys today on this Saturday edition. I've got Go Big Orange Friday. Oh, yeah, we're back. Per usual, at this time with Mr. Ryan Shumpert of Rocky Top Insider and Ethan Stone of the UTK Daily Beacon. We talked Tennessee baseball, basketball, Justin Powell being in the portal, Tennessee's big baseball series with Auburn this weekend, and Aaron Willis entering the portal for the Vols football team. So all that and more with those guys. And then we get into the Atlanta Sports Guys. Oh yeah, Atlanta Sports Guys, Max Markovich and Garrett Chapman, to talk all things Hawks and Falcons on this edition. The Falcons take Drake London first, and in the first round, we talk about that. We spent a lot of time on the Hawks, what's staring them in the face this summer, Donovan Mitchell, Trey's performance in the series, all that and more at the Atlanta Sports Guys. And then special guest to talk all things Bengals. This was a cool thing that so we have not been able to do yet, but got into some Bengals stuff because I'm a big Joe Burrow guy, as everyone knows here on the podcast. So to talk about the Bengals and where they go after making a surprise Super Bowl run this past year, so we talked to SI's Cincinnati Bengals reporter Nicole Zimbro. And we talked about, like I said, all things Bengals, Burrow, Dax, their first round pick, where they're going to go the rest of the draft. It's going to be defensive heavy, that sort of thing. If T. Higgins is long for this team based on all the wide receiver movement and just his upside, where the offensive line is in Cincinnati, all that and more with Nicole. And that was a lot of fun. So I appreciate her coming on this very program. Sports Renaissance Man. Yeah, don't forget, if you have not already subscribed, go ahead and hit up Sports Renaissance Man. All my writing is there. SportsRenaissanceMan.substack.com. Type in an email. That simple. Also, we're on YouTube. Oh yeah, every episode has a video component. So go ahead and watch those, and we have clips and all kinds of other good stuff over on the YouTube channel, YouTube.com, the Chase Thomas Podcast, right there. That easy, that simple. Go ahead and check that out today. I think that's just about everything. Follow me on Twitter. Oh, that was another thing. Okay, very quickly. My official Twitter, personal Twitter, whatever you want to call it, was hacked on Thursday. I'm still trying to get it back. Hopefully I get it back soon. So Chase_Thomas is not really useful at the moment. Hopefully it gets back. But I pivoted to the show page, so it's not a big deal there. But if you have not already, go ahead and follow me at @PodChaseThomas on Twitter. That's where you'll find all my stuff for the foreseeable future until I get my account back, but fingers crossed that happens sooner rather than later. Like the Facebook page at facebook.com/ChaseThomasWriter, and then of course email me if you have any mailbag questions, anything, any questions about the show, anything like that, ChaseThomasPodcast@gmail.com. All right, Uncle Darren, let's go.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, Go Big Orange Friday. We're back. Red. I didn't get the red memo, so we got Ryan Shumpert in a red sweater. We got Ethan Stone in a red T-shirt, and we've got myself in a Texas Forever. Shout out to Friday Night Lights. Great T-shirt. So I didn't get the memo. I got a little bit of red. I got the Mississippi Braves hat going, so I've got some red in. But Ryan, Ethan, how are you guys doing?
Doing well. Yeah, we had before you'd hopped in here, we were joking about how we were matching, but y'all both have the gray hats going on. So Ethan's really the one who's got it figured out with both of us. You and I are on the outside looking in.
Exactly.
Yeah, Ryan, I'm mad you brought that up. That's what I was gonna say. Me and Chase have the silver thing going, and like he said, he's got some red going too. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you guys might not be able to see it, but yeah, it's a nice color combo thing we got going on today. I really dig it.
Very good color combo. Well, we've got some Tennessee stuff that we need to hit on this very podcast. So I want to start with basketball because Justin Powell entered the portal. BHH announced that he transferred to Louisville, which I think out of the list of potential options, that made the most sense for him and probably the highest upside with Kenny Payne there. And it didn't hurt as much going to Louisville and joining up with Kenny Payne. It's like it is what it is. But if it had been one of the smaller ones, you're like, oh, this is bleak. But Justin Powell now also in the portal. We don't know for sure. He might come back. It's always still a possibility, but he had a very up and down, I think safe to say, first year in Knoxville after transferring from Auburn. Ethan, what did you make of Powell entering the portal, and were you surprised?
I was surprised. It kind of went back and forth, I guess, because at the very end of the year, when I didn't realize that he would have had to sit out a year, I was like, yeah, he's definitely transferring. And then I realized that he has to sit out a year. And you're like, well, it wouldn't make any sense. Like, Victor Bailey's leaving by all, you know, if things go as they're supposed to, I guess, in his mind, in a perfect world, then he'd get more time. But obviously Tyreek, he transfers in. He's going to be, I think, a similar role to what Victor Bailey was probably for this team, a lot of offense. Maybe not so much defense. And that was Justin Powell's problem the entire year, I feel like, is defensively. Barnes said he wasn't really locking in on the defensive end. But with Victor Bailey leaving, with Tyreek Key coming in, even if, you know, they're going to compete for those minutes, I don't see much sense just because he would have to sit out anyway, unless he goes down a division. And I don't know, for a guy like that, for a guy like that, I don't think he would do that. I would think he would just stay at Tennessee, and he'd probably see an uptick in minutes, at least a little bit, I would think, with Victor Bailey being gone, at least being a little more trusted in the system. But, you know, who am I to know? Who is Justin Powell to know, I guess? But he seems to have made that decision. And I mean, like you said, there's a possibility he can come back, but I would doubt it personally. He seems to be set on it. So
what do you think, Ryan?
Yeah, Ethan and I texted at length about this and kind of just the college basketball landscape as a whole on Wednesday night. And of all the Tennessee's transfers, this is the one that I really – it doesn't make sense to me. I mean, Brandon Huntley Hatfield, while I don't think that decision was the right one, I can wrap my head around how he got to that point, how that decision was made, that he wanted a guarantee of a lot of minutes a game and he wants to go to the NBA after next season. Mm-hmm. But with Justin Powell, it doesn't add up to me. And I think I would go a step further from what you said, up and down season. I would call it a disappointing season. And Ethan mentioned the defense, and – that's right, but I think what made it so disappointing is it seemed like he was so focused on not making mistakes on the defensive end that he just played so timid offensively. And his greatest skill set is his ability to shoot and his ability to score. And when he was out there afraid to shoot the ball in January and February, there was no reason for him to be on the court. But with all that said, I still think his skill set's really good. I think he's a really good shooter. I think he's talented. I think he's a guy that can help Tennessee down the road. And while there's maybe not a path to him being a starter next season, unless Santiago Vescovi or Josiah Jordan-James surprise and stay in the NBA draft, there's a pretty clear-cut path to the playing time. I mean, Tyreek Key should not be so intimidating to you that you have to transfer, in my opinion. And like Ethan said, I see Tyreek Key in the Victor Bailey mold. And frankly, if Powell wasn't so scared to shoot, he would have played a lot more minutes than Victor Bailey did last season. So, and Tennessee loses another point guard in Kennedy Chandler. Obviously, a point guard Powell is not a ball handler, but there's more minutes open in the backcourt. And then when you look 2 years down the road, there's when he's probably not only first going to be eligible to play with him transferring, unless he goes down, like y'all said. Vescovy's gone then, James is gone then. Obviously, the nature of college basketball, Tennessee's going to bring in good players to compete, but it's going to be wide open for him to have that chance to have a starting role and play 25, 30 minutes a game, which is, I imagine, what he wants. So it doesn't add up to me. The one thing I had heard is a possibility is maybe going overseas, Australia was somewhere I'd heard, and playing professionally. But really, every situation he has, go play overseas. I would think he should be trying to get his degree, not to say he can't play in the NBA, but I don't think he's a surefire NBA guy. Transferring down doesn't seem to add up. Sitting out a year doesn't seem to add up when you look at what Tennessee's roster in depth chart looks like for that 2024 season or 2023-24 season. So confusing, befuddling to me, but at the end of the day, I don't think it's the end of the world for Tennessee. It's just not a decision that I think added up on Justin Powell's part. And someone who still had some belief in him and thought he could help the Tennessee basketball program was surprising to see.
It is odd. Like, I guess that would be the most logical, because I just don't understand why he'd want to sit out after the kind of year he just had, sit out another year and just really bank on one final great year somewhere. I don't know. That doesn't seem likely to me. So I think the overseas part makes a lot of sense, but it's another body that Tennessee is really going to have to figure out. Like, I'm more he's not someone that I'm just going to lose sleep over. I think Rick Barnes isn't going to lose sleep over losing him. I think BHH is more not even an issue, just because we still have a due and we still have some pretty solid depth down low. Kumwa comes back. Like, I'm not as concerned about Hatfield being gone as I am just the guard depth. So Collins, who we talked about too, and like whether or not he would come over, he stays, which was a surprise I think to a lot of folks. But now you have Key. Like, what are the odds that he is just like a vocal point next year, that Key is actually going to be someone that Vols fans should be prepared to be a lead playmaker and just have a very expansive role right away in Knoxville, Ryan?
I think it just depends on what Tennessee is able to do in the transfer portal and probably to a lesser degree to prep ranks going forward. Tyrese Hunter, Iowa State transfer, Big 12 freshman of the year, is supposed to be on campus this weekend. If you land a guy like that, I think Tyreek Key's role probably doesn't change much from what we said, similar to Victor Bailey's. But if you don't land a top-notch guard transfer, then he's going to have a chance to be really your main guard coming off the bench next season. And I don't really see a path to him starting, but to a path to him playing 20 minutes a game, I think that's possible if Tennessee kind of continues to swing and miss on some guys in the portal. So, and I think that's where Collins was just such a good fit for what Tennessee needed with his point guard, his passing, solid shooter. I think that is probably, of all the, you know, blows or the guys that have transferred out, the guys you've missed on in the transfer portal, I think that's the one that hurts the most for Tennessee right now.
When you look at the portal and who else is out there and who else Tennessee makes sense for, is there any other name that stands out to you, Ethan?
Tyrese Hunter is the interesting one that Ryan just said. I mean, he's got a heck of a list. I think Gonzaga's on there, if I'm not mistaken, Auburn, a whole bunch of guys like that. I'm blanking on names right now. Those are pretty decent amount of guards. I feel like that Princeton guy, what's his name, the weigh-in, he might be, I guess, on the docket there. But Tyrese Hunter is the one that's most interesting to me, just because obviously he's an elite prospect. I know people were talking about Imani Bates. I haven't heard anything different about that. I feel like he's not a guard, obviously, but not really anything outside of Tyrese Hunter. It's kind of a wasteland thing. I feel like them missing on Brandon Murray and obviously missing on Yuri Collins, like Ryan said, that kind of, I think, threw them for a loop a little bit, because when you don't get a guy like Collins and you put all your eggs in that one basket, in the Collins basket, and then all of a sudden it shows up that you don't get them, and instead you're getting Tyreek Key, who is a fantastic offensive player, struggles defensively, but fantastic offensive player that can give you a lot. If that's really the only guy that you're looking at right now that you can say he can go out and score the basketball, I mean, you might be in a little bit of trouble. But obviously, still a long off season. Plenty of more people are going to enter the portal, and Tennessee's going to have a lot more chances in that aspect.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens. I don't think they're done, and I think we'll see what happens going forward. A lot of portal talk on this edition of Kobe Orange Friday here on the Chase Owens Podcast, because we've got Aaron Willis, who entered the portal today, as we're recording this on a Friday. I don't think this was a big shock. I think this was something, I mean, it's one of those where it's like, I mean, I don't think he was going to be another significant piece in the linebacker rotation. It seems like Brian Jean Marie, is it, how do you pronounce his name? What is it? Is it
Jean Marie?
Jean Marie. Okay.
Yeah.
It seems like the two linebackers set where we're going to play Beasley and Banks is going to be the thing going forward again this year. And I think he probably just wants to play. And he was also a Pruitt guy. He came in for Pruitt and was one of Pruitt's big gets two classes ago. And now he enters the portal and he'll probably go somewhere smaller. And maybe it's kind of like the situation. What was the linebacker last year? Church, who ended up at Michigan State. What was his name?
Crouch. And he's in Crouch, the transfer portal. Did you see that? Yeah. This morning he entered the portal. Crazy. Yeah, seemed to have a good. He seemed like he had a good year at Michigan State. I was kind of surprised to see that.
I just
another
portal,
Justin
man.
Powell. What do you? I mean, what, he's not going to be eligible. What's he going to? He's a senior. I mean, he has 2 years of eligibility. But that's. It made me think of Justin Powell when I saw it. Where it's just like, what are you going to do? Where is the grass greener at this point for you? But who knows? Best of luck to him.
I just feel like now I think so many kids are putting themselves in the portal. Where like, did you see the Miami kid who was like, you either step up the NIL offer or I'm entering the portal? Like, I wonder if that's what a lot of these kids are doing now too, where it's like, yeah, I had a great year at Michigan State, but it's less about the kind of year that I had and more like, can I get more money in NIL somewhere else? And if y'all aren't going to step up at Michigan State, I'm going to look elsewhere. And it's less, even if my production dips or whatever, it's just, I think there's going to be a lot of short-sighted thinking. And that's just natural because these kids are super young. And when you're that young, it's easy to get sidetracked with stuff like that. And I just think we're going to see a lot of those crazy offers or promises that are being made or thrown at him. And then those promises might get pulled. Who knows? I don't know. The NCAA, we'll see. I think the one positive, and we talked about on the full ride earlier this week, was just that, like, as that damning report from Ross Dellinger on the changes, the radical changes that are coming in college football. One of the ones that stands out though, which I think is just going to be great, is just that a 3 month window, transfer window. That changes so much. If we get a 3 month window and coaches can, I mean, not just for us, it would make our lives a lot easier to be able to keep up with everything and not have to worry about what rosters are looking like and coaches having to lie through their teeth up until May 1st because they don't want to lose people. Up until then, it's a great battle. Like, we're doing, like, those guys are neck and neck. I don't know which way I'm gonna go, but we'll see. And then May 2nd, so we have our guy, and he's gonna be the starter this fall. It's like they are just trying to, I don't know, it's asking a lot for roster management purposes to keep everybody happy and to keep this thing moving. But that will be, if that happens sooner rather than later, that would be great. That and the recruiting calendar getting changed, those are the two biggest things, and it seems like that's a possibility with Emmert stepping down and the Transformation Committee?
Transformation Committee, yeah.
So I'm pretty optimistic, actually, about what they're going to do in a multitude of ways, but we'll see. Where do you think Tennessee stands now, though, in terms of their linebacker depth? Do we think they did back in the portal? Do you think that we saw enough from Beasley and Banks last year that they'll be fine at least for one more year? Or I don't know. Where are you at with the linebacker situation now that Willis is gone, Ethan?
I mean, I would say you have to go back in the portal. It's not like Willis was some, you know, monster player last year. If I'm not mistaken, he got one tackle in his entirety of the year as Pruitt's top signee. So you got guys like Banks that obviously has shown that he can get it done at that position. You got Juwan Mitchell still. I'm interested to see what he's going to do this season after obviously not really panning out coming from Texas in the season prior. But I would say you'd have to go to the portal, at least get one more just from a depth perspective. I can't exactly remember the guys that Tennessee got in linebacker just off the top of my head in the freshman class this season. But you kind of need that, I guess, experience. Not necessarily even if Willis was just going to be a sophomore this season, but having experience on the defensive end, especially one where that's not exactly Tennessee's strong suit right now, with obviously the offense being what it is under Josh Heupel. So I'll just reiterate what I said. I would say they would look to the portal to get at least one more.
Well, we'll see. Ultimately, I would agree with you. I think they're going to add somebody else, but So Casper, obviously going to Oregon, he does not end up in Knoxville for this class with Nico. But part of that we wondered was like, oh, is that just because there's like an understanding that Carnell Tate is like very much in the fold and Casper does want to come in with Tate and, you know, just worry about reps. And this is already a loaded wide receiver room in youth. Like we need more veteran depth more than anything else. And that's why we're talking about the Robinsons and the Brew McCoys of the world, is that losing Peyton and Velus Jones was more of an issue. So it's just adding one more veteran guy, because with Squirrel White and just the amount of talent there that they just brought in, Webb and company, Miller, that I don't know. I'm not really worried about the long-term future of the wide receiver room in Knoxville, but this is one of those big ones where it's like, oh, okay. Carnell Tate, it seems pretty likely now that he's going to be a Tennessee Volunteer, right, Ryan?
It at least seems like it's trending in that direction more and more by the week, it feels like. It seems like it's gone from, you know, Tennessee really second fiddle to Ohio State and Notre Dame, to Tennessee and Ohio State really neck and neck coming out of his visit a couple weeks ago, to now where, kind of like you said, it seems like Tennessee's the team to beat, and I think he's going to come back on campus for the Memorial Day weekend. They're having a big recruiting weekend. So if you're able to get him back then, and my understanding is he hasn't, now he could have visits set up, but he hasn't been anywhere. He hasn't been back to Ohio State since his visit to Tennessee earlier this month. To me, that continues to bode. Whenever recruits are visiting you back-to-back and there's no other visit in between, that usually bodes pretty, pretty well for where you stand with them. And that seems to be the case. And it kind of seems like Tennessee's continuing to be more of a player with the offensive tackle down there at IMG, too. I can't.
I don't know how to pronounce this one,
but another one that seems like Nico is working hard and Tennessee kind of continues to trend in the right direction for.
Where is he from originally? Because he's at IMG. It's not like he's from Florida. Is he a West Coast guy like Nico?
I'm not sure. It's a good question. I wouldn't think so. I feel like you don't get a lot of West Coast guys transferring to IMG.
Oh, hold on. No, he is from San Bernardino, California, and he transferred to IMG. So he went all the way from California to IMG.
I know nothing. I know nothing.
Well, he's only right now, they've got Tennessee at 22% chance and 41% chance for USC. I don't know. I mean, that's an Oregon, of course. Are we just going to be competing with Oregon for the foreseeable future? Is that just like our thing? Is just everyone's just back and forth with Oregon and the West Coast guys that we want to bring in? I don't know.
What a weird recruiting battle the Tennessee or team for Tennessee to seemingly just have tons of recruiting battles with. And
yeah,
it's weird because I don't think none of them recently have been this. But like a few years ago, they've had a lot of coaching turnover. It was either Cristobal or maybe before him, they recruited Tennessee pretty hard and got some guys out of Memphis, Hugo Amadi out of Nashville. So it's kind of even going back a few years, and it's with the Tennessee guys, not the West Coast guys like it is now, but it seems like Tennessee and Oregon oddly find themselves going up against each other in recruiting.
Well, not to go full Walter White here, but stay out of our territory, Dan Lanning. Just a subtle warning. Let's end with baseball. So Tennessee beat up on Xavier on Tuesday night. That was fun to watch and write about. I will say, Xavier, I hope they never win another baseball game this year. For the sole fact, the 7 pitching changes that they made in this game was preposterous. Like, just take the L, let someone just keep getting shelled, and save your pitchers for the Big East tournament and all of that over the weekend, because them being allowed to just continually take these dudes out and extend this game, because this was over a 3-hour game. This game would not end. Yes, this was just nonsense. Like, can't have that. Like, we either need to have a mercy rule where it's like, if you're going to change that many pitchers, then guess what? Call the game. Can't do it. Won't allow it. I'm moving on with my night. Like, I looked at the clock because my notes are at, like, keep me occupied and I'm not really like thinking about the time. But this game, thought about the time a lot. And shout out to our guy Xander, who hops off the mound. He is ready to go. I wrote about this. This man is just like, get me out of here. Like, I got things to do. I'm the midweek guy. I've got other things on my plate. I am good. And Xavier had no interest. They were like, we're even going to get in a pickoff battle at second with Luke for a little bit and try and troll him. Like, what are we doing? I needed that out. So, Xavier, shame on you. Shame on the Xavier Musketeers for that nonsense and the amount of pitchers they threw out. And that's where I'm at. I'm very like, were y'all just as upset? It was 3.5 hour game for a Tuesday.
I got a text from Josh, who's the guy that actually covers baseball for the Beacon. And it's like 10:30, 10:45 at night. Mm-hmm. I wasn't even aware baseball was happening. And he's like, that was the worst baseball game I've ever covered in my life. I was like, can't say I envy you right now. Is that what you're interesting to?
I've covered a lot of midweek baseball games in my 4 years at UT. And it's become, I mean, you're barking up my tree right now. It's become mm-hmm. a war that I fight. I am 100%. You need to have a run rule, which yes. we probably wouldn't even have got to in that game, which shows how bad these midweek games can sometimes get. But you're right, Xander. He set the tone. He was great. He went longest outing of the whole year.
And so four pitches, three outs in the first inning.
It was unbelievable. It was like, okay, this is fantastic. He is setting the tone to get this to be a quick midweek game.
Yes.
Frequently, you can have like 15 pitchers total using these midweek games, and it can be unbelievable. And the sixth inning is when everything hit the fan.
Yes.
Two outs. Charlie Taylor with his one, maybe two hits on the season at the plate.
Yeah.
A lazy fly
strong
ball.
Strong
right
Kevon Smith vibes from last year's right, Braves team.
The right fielder can't find the ball. Mm-hmm. Eventually does find it. So it hits his glove. So brutal for Charlie Taylor. If
yeah.
you don't know the baseball fine rules, if the outfielder can't find the ball and does not touch it, it counts as a hit. But if they do touch it, it counts as an error, and it barely touched his glove. So Charlie Taylor doesn't get that third hit of the season. And then after that, Xavier goes on to make two pitching changes in that inning, and Tennessee scores like five more runs. And it was, I believe, a 37-minute half inning, the bottom of the sixth inning was. And it would have been about 15, 16 minutes if that guy just catches the fly ball in right field. So
he just lost it in the lights. Like, it was one of those. Yes. It was a routine pop. It wasn't like a line shot or anything. It was just right up there, and I was like, oh, that's the end of the inning. Nope. And he just completely lost it. We scored two runs off of it, and then it just gave Tennessee more opportunities. Like, the one thing about the middle of our lineup, because this was not a great, this is the Corton Lawson game where he had the two-run dinger to left, and he that being said, he did cost Xander his no-no on a routine grounder to short, which I didn't understand why they counted that as a hit. It was
not a routine grounder to short.
It was
a play that could have been made. It was hit in between the third baseman and the shortstop, and a good throw. They probably would have had him. I am with you there, but it
cost him the no-no. The whole thing was
the no-no,
which would have been great. Like, we just could have gotten that thing going. Xander was down for it. If the way he was pitching in the pitch count, I don't know. I was here for it. But like what I was saying with the middle of the lineup, because the middle of the lineup sucked. Like, Jarrell struggled on Tuesday, and Beck was 0-for-3. He was K-ing. He was just like, I'm chilling till Auburn. Drew Gilbert was even off a little bit early, and then the bottom finally falls out, where it's like you can only go through the Tennessee lineup so many times before, like, oh, the worst situation is if you're down big and it's because of Cortland Lawson and Charlie Taylor. Like, that's when you're like, oh, we're in trouble, because Jordan Beck's not going 0-for-6. Like, you just keep putting him up there, and eventually he's going to break through, him and Gilbert and Lipscomb. But yeah, I don't know. I was a fan. That part was great, and Beck obviously turned things around, and Ben Joyce is just a delight. Like, the crowd perks up. Like, these broadcasts are super quiet on the network and SEC Network Plus, but like, you can hear through your TV if you don't go to the games, like, just the crowd all just turn around and pay attention, and just the oohs and ahs every time they look at the, because you can see all their heads turn to the speed. Like, they look to the scoreboard to see what that hits, and it's just 102, and he went in for Xander immediately and gets 2 Ks, and then that's it. Never see him again. But Ben Joyce, an absolute delight. The flamethrower is pretty great. But that's the extent of the Tennessee Xavier game that nobody should watch ever. Like, you can go watch a replay. Don't do it. It needs to be lost in the archives forever.
Yeah, it was a very boring game, extremely boring game. So you're right. Ben Joyce is like he's pitching in like all these midweek games just to get him reps, because he hasn't had many going into the season. And it's like, these midweek games, a lot of times they're pretty boring, and you're working on other stuff while watching them. And it's like, okay, Ben Joyce is in. Close your laptop, go up to the scoot up on your seat, and you're paying attention to literally every single pitch. It's absolutely electric. It's usually the best part of any midweek game is the inning Ben Joyce gets.
they need some kind of sound effects, or they need something to, like, they need to dim the lights. We need, like, something. We need to really go all out in the midweek Ben Joyce appearances where they need to do something. Like, I don't know which booster they need to hit up, but they need to do it. Dim the lights and just, like, enter Sandman when he comes in or something. They need something with
just
this man.
Just a spotlight on him with all the lights off as he runs.
Did you say only in the midweek games? Just to put a little more fear into them? Just
correct. Like,
you guys need to be terrified of this man.
Exactly. Like, it just makes the smaller schools, the Xaviers of the world, feel horrible, where they're like, oh, what? Why do we play these games? Like, we just got the Terminator coming out here for a little bit. I think the midweek games deserve it, because if you are a person who's out here going to these Tuesday night games, God bless you. You're wasting your time. Don't do it. There's all kinds of other stuff, but they need something. They need just to add more stuff. And look, as the sports czar in Knoxville, reach out to me, Danny. We can make this happen. I can figure this out, and we can make these Tuesday night baseball games great again. In terms of Auburn this weekend, what are the expectations? Auburn's ranked not quite Arkansas. Arkansas's in top five. Auburn's what, 19th coming into this weekend? What are we expecting? Ethan, do you think this is another sweep? We're just conditioned to Tennessee just winning every SEC game now. That's just part of the deal. So it's just, we're going to be surprised or stunned at any loss going forward. But do you think at the very least that Tennessee should be in good shape to run the gauntlet? And it seems like this is when Blade gets a little bit more action. It seems like Vitello was hinting at more and more for Mr. Tidwell this week. What do you think?
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, Ryan, I think I saw your thing that he was going to be starting for just the second time this season, obviously against Auburn. And you kind of stole what I was going to say. It seems like Tennessee's just never going to lose an SEC series ever again. And, you know, if it's going to stop, it would be with Auburn. I know they've won four of their last five. That's about my extent of my knowledge of Auburn baseball right now. I know they have a series win over Vanderbilt, I think LSU. And so they're coming in hot right now. I know that. But it's just going to go back to what you said. I don't think Tennessee's ever going to lose an SEC series again until maybe they play Mississippi State at the end of the season. As of right now, I would say Tennessee would probably go in at home. They're going to win two of them at least.
Mississippi State's having a bad year. Like, I'm not as worried about Mississippi State. Like, I think the last trap game series is Georgia at home.
That's what you looked at the schedule before the season, and it was like, well, they're going to lose some series because the road schedule is so hard this year, and the home schedule is not much, which was kind of flip-flopping last year. But then Ole Miss is a huge disappointment. Mississippi State's a huge disappointment, I would say, too. Vanderbilt isn't as good as they usually are. And then kind of on the reverse, Auburn and Georgia have really overachieved and to me have been as good as anybody in the league behind Tennessee and Arkansas. So you really thought the really hard series were going to be on the road, which was going to make a natural they were going to lose some, and it's kind of flipped itself. Auburn and Georgia, last two home series of the regular season, and I think those are, definitely down the stretch, those are your two hardest series, and I think you can argue probably with Vanderbilt, two of the three hardest series in the regular or in SEC play. So when you get them at home, I think with this Tennessee team, no matter where it's at, you're probably going to pick them to win the series, but I think when you get those two series at home, it's hard not to lean towards Tennessee getting the sweep. I wouldn't be shocked if they dropped one because Auburn does have a good team. And it is interesting, you kind of hear this theory a lot in the baseball world that, typically you have your best guy on Friday, then your next best on Saturday, and Sunday you're progressively worse. And it's kind of like, if you don't have the best team, why don't you manipulate that a little bit? And that's kind of what Auburn's done this year. Their best starter, Jacob Gonzalez, pitches on Sunday for him. And I'm really, really excited to watch Drew Beam versus him on the mound on Sunday. That should be what you typically think of as an SEC Friday night pitching matchup on a Sunday series finale. So I'm looking forward to that game.
Yeah. And folks in Knoxville, don't go. I'm tired of the standing room only nonsense, even with my free ticket and everything with the student thing. But I need you to drop that nonsense. We're getting too packed. Too many people are buying in. Nothing to see here. Stay home. I want my space back. I want to be able to move around freely and have the usher stare at me as I bounce around, and I dare them. I'll look them in the eye too. I'll be like, I dare you. Say something. Tell me to move. You don't know who I am. Chase Thomas Podcast. What are you doing? Show my ID. Like, what are you doing? Do you want this smoke? Yeah. I forgot what I was going to say. I just went on my soapbox and Ryan was like, I'm out of this. But
Ryan says, I'm sick of Chase talking right now. he says, I'm leaving.
I had a great final bit too. I had a great final bit about Mississippi because Ole Miss and Mississippi State, Ethan, had to die for Southern Miss to rise. Like, they're a top five team. Like, they had to die. There's Ryan. He's back.
AirPods died. Had to make a quick move to the wired headphones.
He entered the portal and then pulled his name out of the portal. So thank you, Ryan, for doing your due diligence and thinking about your options in the podcast market. But what I was saying as we wrap up here, Ole Miss and Mississippi State had to die for Southern Miss to rise. And there can't be three great teams. I just love that Southern Miss is great. Shout out to Hattiesburg and the good folks over there. But state of Mississippi, all kinds of great content. And Country Pleasin' Sausage is on Knoxville Kroger shelves now, which I am, like, I almost hyperventilated and, like, fell over in the Kroger yesterday, where friend of the pod, Radio Wyatt, Matt Wyatt, former Mississippi State quarterback, good friend of mine, he that's his thing. And, like, it's a local butcher shop in Mississippi, and I've just heard nothing but great stuff. And I'm a big sausage guy. That's my favorite food, is sausage. But I cannot have it all the time because that will kill you. And you can, I like, just, yep. You can't do a lot of red meat. So it's a lot of fish in my weekly diet. I do a lot of fish, but when I do red meat, it's sausage. And, bro, had never had Country Pleasin' yet. When I say Country Pleasin' sausage is an absolute delight because I had a shit ass yesterday because my Twitter getting hacked and everything. And the one thing that made it all worth it was that Country Pleasin' sausage that I had that night. Just electric stuff. Electric stuff. I was just on cloud nine. I lost just where I was. I forgot it. Just everything. Just the flavor overload was just creme de la creme, all about it.
I'd like to say, just as a collective, the three of us had pretty, pretty awful Thursdays, I'd say.
Oh, no.
I mean,
what happened?
With AJ Brown, that's Ryan's thing, and obviously your Twitter getting hacked, which I saw. Big unfortunate for you. And then the Jazz just about made me lose my mind, so I had to go to bed and stop thinking about them all day. But it's just not a great Thursday, I think I should point out.
Ryan's not well with the whole AJ Brown thing. He's still not well. Yeah.
Well, it was like, I was just so convinced the Titans were going to draft an offensive lineman, and I had done zero research on, like, which offensive lineman I wanted them to draft. So it was the most low-key draft night ever. I was literally in my room, had it on, was doing some work, and my laptop was plugged in. I was facing away from my TV working on something, and I heard him on the broadcast go, some of you guys may be avoiding Twitter because of not wanting to hear your draft pick spoiled, which is exactly what I was doing. I hadn't got on Twitter the whole time. And I turn around and I see that the Titans are now on the clock and I go, oh gosh, this can't be good. And it in fact was not good. It was not good at all. And I got no work done the rest of the night. So I didn't even open my laptop up again before going to bed. So I am not well, but trying to choose joy on this big orange Friday.
There you go. Choose joy. That's a great way of ending things. Ethan, what can the good folks check out from you and the rest of the team over at the Daily Beacon this week?
Yes, the Daily Beacon obviously going to have coverage of Tennessee's series with Auburn, and then we've got On Rocky Top, which is just kind of a collection of the best moments of Tennessee sports and the past year and other stuff, news, be it arts, all sorts of stuff from campus. So if you're on campus, pick one of those up. It'll be out, I believe, next week, maybe the week after that.
There you go. Ryan, what about you? The good folks over there at Rocky Top Insider?
Yeah, same. We'll have plenty of stuff from baseball this weekend, some stuff on the basketball recruiting transfer portal front, have stuff on Tyrese Hunter, have stuff on Justin Phillips, who Tennessee made his top seven yesterday. I think it's their top target in the class of 2023. So plenty of stuff to kind of keep you up to date, stuff on all the transfers, both in the football and basketball program this week. So everything you need to know to keep you up to date on the Vols.
There you go. There you go. Ethan, Ryan, thank you as always for the time, and I will talk to you both next week.
Sounds great.
Thanks.
Nico! All right, we're back here on the Chase Thomas Podcast, where I am now joined by a first-timer with Dwight Schrute in the background and Cincinnati Bearcats basketball in the background. You might guess that the Cincinnati Bengals might come up on this podcast, because all Cincy all the time with Nicole Zimbrot. There you go. I did Zimbrot.
Yeah, there you go. Zimbrot.
Yes. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me on today.
Thank you for being here. So night one of the draft is in the books. The Bengals obviously made a selection. Are you okay? Is Bengals Nation okay? Because it seemed like it was a surprise to a lot of folks.
Bengals Nation is great with this pick.
Okay.
At first glance, Daxton Hill is a safety out of Michigan, mm-hmm. but he's very versatile. He can play safety. He can play corner. He can play just about anywhere in the defensive backfield. He has a lot of athleticism, his versatility, range. He can cover. He can hit. He's physical. He's kind of everything you want in a safety. And then, of course, you look at who the team has now with Jesse Bates and Von Bell. But both of them have question marks, too, with Bates on the franchise tag. And who knows if Bates and the team are going to be able to get to that long-term deal. And then you have Von Bell going into his final year of his contract. So not necessarily the cornerback or the defensive lineman that many thought were going to come in that first-round pick at 31, but still a very solid pick. A lot of draft analysis had him in the top 20. So really a steal at 31 for the Bengals.
Big fan of the name. Daxton Hill just feels like a perennial pro bowler. Like,
yes, he goes by Dax. Third, like that. So yeah. Dax Hill. We'll remember that name.
Dax Hill. I like that. Dax. Yeah. So that's one area of need. So they add somebody there. So just in case, like Jesse Bates, we don't know what's going to happen after this year with him. But in terms of round two and three, and we're recording this before day two gets kicked off here for the NFL draft, where do you think they go? What area, not player, but what area of need do you think they hit next?
So in the second round, they pick 63rd, and then in the third round, they pick 95th. So still, they've got time in between. They really do need to add another corner. They have Chido Awuzie on the outside, and then Eli Apple. They really don't have anyone else on the outside, and of course, they have Mike Hilton in the slot. But really need to add that nether corner to go into that room with them. And then they need to address the interior of the line. I think if the guy can play along all positions of the line, great, but definitely defensive line too.
So you got to, so it's going to be all defense all the time. So you think they're pretty much okay in there, like, because the offensive line, they obviously spent a lot of money in free agency, which we'll get to in a second, but do you think that that is something that they have just, they're like, hey, we'll probably take some flyers late in the draft on some offensive guys, but right now we've got to add more to the defense, and that's got to be priority one?
Well, if you look at their past couple of off seasons, they've really attacked free agency in defense and then added the guys in offensively in the draft. And this year they're kind of switching that up where they attacked free agency with those free agent signings on the offensive line and need to address some depth issues on defense. But not to say they still need to add another lineman. Offensive linemen, they need to add a wide receiver, they need a fourth wide receiver, possibly a receiver who can return punts, return kicks, and a tight end. They did sign Hayden Hurst, but some question marks behind Hurst, and then Drew Sample, but he's more of a blocking tight end. So that's where I would see the rest of the draft panning out for them.
Enjoy Hayden Hurst. That was not the best experience in Atlanta, I'll say.
You know, when he came to Cincinnati, he was talking about how excited he was to finally feel like he could have the first full opportunity, just because in Atlanta he had Pitts come on, and then, of course, in Baltimore he had Mark Andrews come on. And now it's going to be him in that room unless they do end up drafting someone who could potentially, but I feel like that was a great signing for both sides, where it gives Hurst the year to prove himself that he was that first round talent when he was drafted. But then the Bengals too, if Hurst doesn't work out, he just walks next year.
Well, what's the impact of CJ moving on? Because it seemed like he was kind of like a heart and soul type guy for this Cincinnati Bengals team. And him just going through it where he's playing injured and was just super down. And What happened in the AFC title game really sucked for him. Yeah. But where does that leave them in that regard?
I think you hit it right on the head, heart and soul. He brought a lot of energy to that locker room. But I think, and he was a lot of like the nitty gritty on the offense, just did a lot of blocking. Really this year, even though he was very much into his career, was the year he broke out because he was able to be a pass catcher in the offense. But I don't know if exactly how much of a difference it's going to make depending on the impact that Hurst comes brings into it. I definitely think, I mean, that energy that he brought, the fans loved him, the team loved him. I mean, he was so great to do media with, all that. Like, he was the player that everybody wanted to have on their team. So he's definitely going to be missed, but we'll see on the field just how much his impact is missed with him moving on to New York.
Do you think they've addressed the offensive line enough for Joe Burrow to feel comfortable going into 2022?
They've definitely addressed it enough that it is significantly better, but mm-hmm. they still need to add some depth to it. They need to address the left guard position. We had Quentin Spain there last year. He's still a free agent, so I wouldn't rule out the possibility of him resigning, especially he's been in Cincinnati this offseason working out at a local gym where Joe Burrow does. So I wouldn't rule that out, but we'll see what the draft brings in terms of them drafting, if they draft another guard. They drafted Jackson Carmen in the second round last year, see where he goes. But really now, they just need to add some depth to that line.
Joe Burrow's out here working out at a local gym in Cincinnati. He's just out in the streets, just like hanging out.
Not like local gym, but okay.
He's not at the
like,
Y.
Not the Y. It's called a Train SB. Very athletes go there.
So you can't just walk in there and be like, "What's up, Joe? I need to machine real quick."
Oh, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. So that gym, like Drew Sample works out there. Mm-hmm. There's a handful of professionals that work out there together in the off season.
As someone who watched all of Burrow's rookie year and then saw what he was this past year, what for the folks who only hopped on the Joe Burrow bandwagon, with that playoff run, but like, what did you see that changed for him from year one to year two that you were like, "Oh, this is something that he really learned, he really got better at"? Outside of just, it helps to have a Ja'Marr Chase out wide. That's a nice thing. But what did you see specifically that changed with him?
I would say two things that changed. His deep ball, and of course, like you said, it helps when Ja'Marr Chase is there. Mm-hmm. His deep ball improved drastically from his rookie year to year two. Even him hitting guys like T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd and stride as well, but of course Ja'Marr Chase was his number one there. His deep ball drastically improved, but then too, and not necessarily from year one to year two, but you saw last year him just getting more and more comfortable with his feet, with his legs after his injury from the start of the season to the end of the season. And he even said it to the media throughout the season, just how as it progressed, that he was getting more comfortable with his legs. And it really did help when he felt the full strength back in them.
How serious, though, is it with the knee stuff now where it's like, we one more? Like, the Bengals, have they talked about it? Like, are there people who are pretty involved with what's going on? Because he played, do we know exactly what he played through in the Super Bowl? And just, like, are Bengals fans just extremely nervous about the state of his knee this early into his career?
I think there's definitely worry there for him, for anybody to tear their ACL, but for a guy like Burrow to have that injury and then you kind of hold your breath each time he gets hit just because you're like, oh my gosh, you don't want that. And then Bengals fans kind of have PTSD from Carson Palmer.
Yeah.
Yes, you knew exactly what I was about to say. Carson Palmer getting hurt. And they just want their guys healthy. And so I would definitely say there is definitely some worry, but the Bengals really are working to make sure that he stays upright with those additions. And just imagine what a guy like Burrow can do with a pocket that's clean and doesn't collapse.
I think he might get bored. He likes moving around.
Just might be like a game of darts. I'm going to just throw it wherever.
Well, I mean, it's kind of like Wilson, where he's going to be behind a better offensive line in Denver this year. But, like, part of the appeal of having a bad offensive line is they could address other needs elsewhere. And Wilson was fast enough and he was good enough moving around in the pocket that, hey, he was able to get some cardio in while he's playing a game of football. And Burrow, just even at LSU, he likes moving. He likes he likes creating on the fly. Like, he is someone who likes finding guys open that he just dances around a little bit. And there's something... he's just one of those guys who can play behind a poor offensive line, but you're like, now the injuries, it doesn't matter. You're not playing behind a poor offensive line anymore, Joey. You're not allowed. It's not fun anymore for us.
Exactly. It's not fun. We want Joe to be as healthy as possible so that he can continue to have career seasons and lead the Bengals to winning seasons and hopefully actually bring a Super Bowl back to Cincinnati.
Just don't look at the quarterbacks who lost their first Super Bowl and whether or not they got back. Don't look at that stat.
I know. Don't look at that. Don't look at that. Oof.
When you see Marquise Hollywood Brown get traded last night and reports coming out, it's just he didn't like playing in that scheme, the Greg Roman style. It was nothing against Lamar, and they're still cool. But, like, I wonder, because one of the things that people overlooked, I think, coming, because I had the Bengals as a playoff team before last year on the pod, and I was like, I just don't know how many teams are in the league, because I was super in on Burrow, and I watched all of his college stuff at LSU and being down here in SEC country. Like, I was all in on the Joe Burrow experience, and I was always pro Burrow over Herbert and guys like that. But I wondered, I was like, okay, when they're in 11 personnel, with a healthy Boyd, Higgins, and Chase, like, the matchups are going to overwhelm too many teams. Like, there will be some teams who are able to slow that down, but by and large, those three being healthy at the top of their game, it's just, they're going to win games. Burrow's going to find them, and they're going to be extremely difficult to stop week after week. And I don't know, like, you look at Higgins, who could be a number one in a lot of other scenarios, with Brown getting traded because he was upset, and then you look at Debo, and you just look at the receivers. A.J. Brown is more of a money thing in Tennessee, but by and large, we're seeing a lot more wide receiver movement. We're seeing a lot more teams just try and figure things out in the wide receiver situation. But do you think there's a chance that T. Higgins is looking around the league and he's like, yeah, it's cool to play with Jamar and Tyler Boyd, but, like, I can be a number one somewhere. I should probably be paid like a number one receiver. Do you think the Higgins experience in Cincinnati might be coming to a close faster than Cincy fans might be prepared for?
I'm not quite sure yet on that. We'll see. You know, T. Higgins is from Tennessee. He grew up a Bengals. Yes, he grew up a Bengals fan. It's easy for his family to come up here, but I definitely agree. It's going to come a time when the Bengals are going to have to make a decision on who they want to pay, because they've got a lot of guys coming up, of who they want to pay. And, it depends if T keeps progressing the way that he is, that he's going to get that top dollar of wide receiver money that a lot of these guys are getting. And it's crazy, these dollars. I mean, A.J. Brown is getting $100 million in Philadelphia. Like, holy cow. Just so I wouldn't say yet, but it's a topic of discussion just moving forward on who is the team going to want to pay, especially like, are you going to want to pay Chase and Higgins? Who are you going to have to sacrifice on to not pay? Yeah. Because also Burrow is probably going to get everything that he wants when his contract comes up. So you got to pay Burrow too. So it's going to be a puzzle piece of who's the team want to pay, and unfortunately for Bengals Nation, they might have to say goodbye to some of their beloved players because of these decisions.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they take a wideout somewhere in this draft.
Like, I wouldn't either. I love Alec Pierce, not just biased because of UC, you know, but I think he'd make a great fit, but I don't know if he's going to be there for the Bengals if they decide to take receiver. I think Pierce could come off earlier, so we'll see on what, but I definitely think corner, defensive line, wide receiver. Those are three very possible positions they can attack.
Do they say UC more than Cincy? Like, is it not? Is Cincy just what people outside of the area call it? Where it's like, yeah, Cincy's in the playoff, but in in at like UC students, they just say like we're UC.
Maybe,
I've never heard that before.
Maybe since I am an alum, I say yeah. UC. Okay. But I've heard it. I mean, when College Game Day came to campus, mm-hmm. they said Cincy a lot. Mm-hmm. So how do you spell Cincy?
Oh, C-I-N-C-Y.
Okay, perfect.
Because some people do something else.
Yeah, they do. They instead of a Y, they put an I, like C-I-N-C-I. And I'm like, no.
No, that's if you're gonna do that, you might as well just spell out the whole name. Like that's one of those. Where you're, like no,
yes,
Cincy
exactly.
with a Y implies that like we're breaking this up and we're doing our own thing. But if you're gonna put the I, then you might as well just go Cincinnati. That's silly.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we'll end on this. So clairvoyant Nicole. Where do you think, or who do you think the Bengals draft tonight? Who do you think are the picks tonight for them?
I would love, and 60, what number? 63, mm-hmm. unless they trade up. I would love for them to do a cornerback. I just think okay. that they need to address that. But also, like, the defensive line group in this draft isn't as deep. So, mm-hmm. If I had to go cornerback, I would... love. I don't know if McCreary out of Auburn's going to be there. Kyler Gordon out of Washington, I don't know if he's going to be there, but those are two guys I really like. And then Booth from junior from Clemson is still on the board. First round grade, but he's had some medical flags, so I'm wondering if that's why he's dropping. So we'll see with him. So those are just three guys I would keep an eye on in the second round. D-line wise, love Logan Hall from Houston. Don't think he will be there though, but we'll see. Travis Jones, Connecticut. Winfrey from Oklahoma. Yeah, those guys. We'll see. Those are the kind of corner defensive line tonight.
There you go, Nicole. What can the good folks check out from you across all Bengals?
So just all. The draft content coming up from the team and I. Off season, we have Bengals report for workouts next week, May 2nd. And then, of course, hit the ground running in July.
There you go. The season. There is no off season in the
There
NFL
really
anymore.
No, especially when you go to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
That was fun, though. So, yeah, love it. Football all year round.
I don't think I have to worry about that anytime soon with the Falcons. I think another Super Bowl trip is probably a couple years away. But hey, we got a wide out, another wide out in the first round. So shout out to Calvin Ridley for putting us in that position once again. all things great falconing at all times. Nicole, thank you so much for making the time. This was a lot of fun, and we'll have to check back in again soon.
Absolutely.
We're back here on the Chase Thomas podcast, where I am still the aforementioned Chase Thomas and one of three Atlanta sports guys on this very podcast, where a lot of doom and gloom in Atlanta sports country over the last few days. Drake London going 8 to the Falcons. Max Markovich is still reeling from that. We've got the Hawks season ending this week. Just a lot going on in terms of the two big ones in Atlanta. Garrett, how are you, sir?
If I'm being completely honest, I kind of forgot about the Hawks. I mean,
did you?
I put them out of my head. No, obviously not. But it has been. I postmortem was Sunday, and it was over. And then I was like, maybe they can take it to 6 games and kind of at least make it like an entertaining series, sort of. I mean, they were never going to win the series. Once they lost on Sunday, it was over. But make it 6 games, have some pride, and then when they had Jimmy Butler was out and everything else, and Kyle Lowry was still out, I mean, I was like, hey, maybe we got a shot to at least make it 6, and no, it was just a miserable, miserable series. The Atlanta Hawks just, man, what a nightmare. Trae Young played about as poorly as anybody could play, and we saw it all season. Like, whenever Trae Young plays poorly, the Hawks lose basketball games, and there's just nobody else on this team who can really pick up the slack. And Look, I've kind of come around to the idea of picking up a Donovan Mitchell or some other dynamic scorer or somebody else who can do big things with the basketball to help Trae Young move off of the basketball and get moving and do everything else. So this series showed us a lot about the Atlanta Hawks, and mostly not good things.
Yeah, we'll get to Mitchell and all that in a second, but I don't know. I think I'm just glad it's over. Like, this was one of those where the Hawks weren't winning anything. I also am curious, like, with Max, like, I was wondering if the Hawks go down and Trey's awesome, like, how that affects Trey's offseason mindset. And Trey being awful in this series is actually the best case scenario for the Hawks, because I think he's putting this on himself and is just saying, like, I have to play better. I can't get locked down like that for a whole series. I can't just get overwhelmed in that way. I can't just play that poorly, because we've never seen Trey play that poorly over that period of stretch. And give a lot of credit to the Heat for what they were able to do, but it not just like if this series had been Trey just going bonkers every night and then they still go down in five or six, then we're like, oh, this is doomsday scenario where he's like, I've done all I can do. I need help and you got to get me help this summer or I'm asking out, where it's like, I've done everything. But Trey actually having a rough series is like, oh, Trey's like, I got to get better. I got to get back in the lab. I got to fix this. This is on me. And you're like, oh, thank God. If we're going to lose a playoff series like this, Trey actually having a rough go of it is actually going to be the best thing, best case scenario for the Hawks. Do you agree with that, Max?
Yeah, I felt like going into this series, there was sort of like a predetermined media narrative of like, this is going to be the series that we finally say Trey needs like a serious second star.
Mm-hmm.
And then that narrative like wasn't clean by the end of it because of what you're saying. Like, that was the worst Trey Young's played since his rookie year in a consecutive a few weeks stretch. And I think we'd be freaking out about this a whole lot more if this postseason performance had come last year instead of, you know, what actually happened. And so we know this isn't like I think there'd be a huge narrative if this had happened last year of Trey's game's not built for the postseason. He can't be the guy offensively to lead a serious playoff contender. And it's really hard to start that narrative when you saw what happened last year. And first of all, I think a lot of credit goes to the Heat, man. Like, that is a really good defensive team. And the way they switched everything on Trey and made his life a living hell frustrated the hell out of him. And he didn't shoot it well. And I think those two things are related. Like, I think it's sort of a cascading thing where if he can't get downhill in the pick and roll and he's sort of bogged down up top, and he's not willing to move the ball and cut off the ball, which is what he needs to do to get better, then things are stagnant offensively because they can switch every single guy on that court onto Trey, and they can at minimum hold their own, and most of them bottled him up all series. And I think that has to be a light bulb moment for him of how am I going to combat that? Because you know every team, you know, the Celtics are like that. Every team that is built like that is going to try to defend him the same way. Mm-hmm. And I think if we've learned anything from Trey's entire career, it's that he deserves the benefit of the doubt that he's going to figure it out. Because he has, and he said this, he's gotten better every year of his entire life. Like, he's gotten better through high school, through college, every year in the NBA. And I have no doubt he's going to get better again next year, and I don't worry about Trey. But the rest of the team, man, the roster's in a really weird spot. And I think what you're saying is right. Like, at the end of Game 5, Trey said, man, DeAndre played great, and I wish we could have won it for him. And that is Trey recognizing, like, hey, man, I didn't play well. Like, this is on me. And I think that's a positive. I Garrett said he'd forgotten about the Hawks. I kind of forgot about the Hawks because I emotionally divorced from the Hawks, like, a month ago, six weeks ago. So, I mean, like, I enjoyed the play-in, but I was ready for that to be over. And the way the season ended, the sideline out of or the baseline out of bounds play to end the season is just so perfect for what this year was. And it's really disappointing, but I'm on to the disappointment of the Atlanta Falcons instead.
Well, Garrett, you mentioned Donovan Mitchell, and something that I thought about with this series, Graham Chappell did a lot of great film work over at Peachtree Hoops. So the good folks, if you're looking for like a lot of good film study and insight into what the Heat were doing and throwing at Trey in this series, I would highly encourage you to go check out his stuff. But he highlighted, and there were some clips, and it's like something I jotted down in my notes of just like, the three guys at Trey, where Trey's got the ball and he's, you can just tell all he wants to do, because he wasn't able to get to the line at all. And part of the reason he wasn't getting to the line is because he couldn't get inside. Like, it was just shut off, where Tyler Hero and guys who we don't even think are that great defenders, the communication from Miami, where they just, Trey thought he was going to turn a corner. Guess what? Guy right there. And he knew he couldn't turn the corner on anybody, and he could. Like, that's the whole frustrating part for Trey, is like, I can get by this guy, but I've never been faced with this, where there's another guy on both sides and I can't get through. So I can't even drive and kick and do the kind of stuff that I want to do. And the only way to fix what happened is Trey to be an off-ball guy. Like, the way for the Hawks to get back in the series was having someone else, like a Donovan Mitchell or whoever, to not allow the Heat to just be able to show like that and to help the way they did on Trey, where Trey just had nothing. Because if you're sending that much help and you're just completely cutting off his ability to even get inside, that's a game changer. And then he had to settle for all kinds. Like, his shot chart in the Sunday game was preposterous. He had like one shot inside and the rest were just deep threes. And that was credit to the Heat, where like, they gave him nothing. And it just, there's nothing you can do. It was suffocating.
And it had a lot to do.
It's a little bit defensively like what teams did to the Bucks with Giannis. Obviously, they're extremely different players, but the way they built a wall and how that really frustrated him, it's like kind of the same. And Milwaukee had to adjust by taking Giannis off the ball and playing him more in the post and in spots where he could take advantage of those touches. And Trey has to learn that lesson too. Like, obviously, they're polar opposite, honestly, type of players. But you're right. Like, they sort of like walled it off a little bit. I don't know if this was what was in the film breakdown, but like, they had the on-ball guy, and even if Trey got past the on-ball guy, they had two guys who were hard helping, and that really pissed off Trey. And so Trey, like, the only option is that he sits in the offseason and watches Steph Curry for weeks on end.
I mean, it's easy to talk about Steph and everything, but Steph is like the epitome of like what everything Trey Young would want to be. As an undersized guard who just plays off of the basketball and can shoot the lights out. I mean, like, that's exactly what he wants to be, and that's exactly what, I'm not going to say what he can do, but that's what his goal certainly is to be. But yeah, the structure of the Miami Heat defense is really what gave him a lot of issues, and it's not dissimilar to what they did all season long to him. I mean, he only averaged, like, what, 16, 17 points per game as a pick-and-roll ball handler. I mean, that's not good, comparatively speaking, to what Trae Young can normally do. And then to make matters worse, I mean, his game is just as a pick-and-roll ball handler. That's what he does best. And then he lost his two best combo men. So you have Clint Capela, who misses the first two games and is not 100%, not even close to 100% for games 4 and 5. I mean, there was just absolutely no way. And then you flip around and you have John Collins, who's playing at, what, 50% at best? Then you're taking away that from him as well. So I don't want to completely come down on Trae Young and just say, hey, no, like, this is, like, throw everything out the window, like, whatever. Like, there was a lot of context that's involved in this. But like you guys were saying, I mean, look, this is a perfect example of why he needs help. Because if you lose one of those guys, which I think one of those guys is going to be gone, and it's probably going to be John Collins, just because they just don't fit next to each other with the way that the Hawks want to play. I just don't think it's necessarily, you can't really build on what you have. Look, you need another ball handler. You need somebody else who's going to be able to distribute. They thought that's what Kevin Huerter could do, or at least become some semblance of that. But then when you throw in the fact that Lou Williams was hurt, and Lou Williams was also supposed to be that scoring guard, it was just a comedy of injuries, you know? Like, the team just wasn't what they needed to be. It wasn't what the team was last year, because no one was playing and no one was healthy. And that, all of it just came to a head when they played the Miami Heat. It was a terrible matchup for the Atlanta Hawks. Just even at full health, it's a bad matchup. So it was just rough. It was rough. It's a learning experience. This is still a young basketball team. I mean, the average age of this team, of like the core, is still like 22, 23, 24. So they got a long way to go. But Travis Schlink also has a job to think about. So does Nate McMillan. Nate McMillan is going to be right there at the forefront. He wants to change the personality of this team, the personnel of this team, and that's going to happen a lot. So it's going to be an interesting offseason to follow for the Atlanta Hawks, because I want to see what they do.
What does that mean, though? What is he wants to change the team and the makeup and stuff like that. It's like, what does that
the
even person, mean?
I mean, just the personnel. You need a tough guy. This is just a soft basketball team.
I would like to talk about Nate McMillan because I think, no, he was out-coached in this series, obviously. Mm. It was, like, painfully obvious. And Eric Spoelstra is one of the best coaches in the league. And I'm sure you guys read the Chris Kirshner article that had quotes kind of trashing McMillan and the story about Trey not being in the huddle, yada, yada, yada. And it's – I think he needs – if he's still the coach, he needs to change the makeup of the team because I think the team is pretty immature. Like, they ran off Lloyd Pierce, and I get it. You know, Lloyd Pierce was certainly by no means a good NBA coach, and they went on that run with McMillan, and now they're tired of McMillan. And it's like a bunch of – look, it's a young team, and a lot of them haven't really, like, been through it. And I just found it kind of off-putting to, like, obviously, anonymously blame – McMillan for all their problems. And I think what changing the team entails is like putting a little bit of like veteran accountability in there.
Mm-hmm.
Like we talked about Marcus Smart at the deadline. Can you imagine, obviously that was not in play because of the Celtics, but can you imagine a guy like Marcus Smart entering this locker room and or Patrick Beverley, like what Patrick Beverley did for the Wolves was probably adds a degree of accountability to these guys who hadn't really done anything in the league, who were super talented and who needed like a cohesive figure to tell them how to win. I think that's what changing the locker room looks like. And we're talking about the second star, and the second star is important, but it also is like, I think it's almost equally as important to add someone like that into the locker room who's going to hold the players accountable when they would prefer to blame somebody else.
I mean, it looks like Udonis Haslem. I mean, like a guy who's just
Solomon Hill,
room.
Man. We had Solomon Hill in here, who Solomon I just, Hill. I think he
it's
was
different
an important
when it's like
guy
a,
last
like
year.
A real contributor, though.
But Solomon Hill wasn't the only guy on that team last year either. Like the whole team was just sort of there was something special. But I mean, I feel like this is going to become some. They're in danger of becoming what the 2016 Falcons were, where everyone keeps like, oh well, in 2016 they did this and this seemed to work, and it's like, well, that worked then and that's what it worked for in that situation, and they caught lightning in a bottle and they let it go and then they just rolled with it. But what they need to do, they need accountability, they need a second star, like Max said. I mean, like, look, you have those things and those things are exceptionally valuable, and they kind of just took it for granted, and ultimately, this is a learning experience. I mean, we'll see what happens next year, obviously. But, I mean, I trust what Travis Schlenk is doing, and I think he's going to make the right decision. And Nick McMillan is still going to be the basketball coach next year.
Well, I think, too, there are some exit interview questions. And it's like Capella and Trey are close. Based on what I was reading through the tea leaves there, where it's like Capella was not even – like, he had Trey's back 100%, where he's like – part of being a great player is it takes 3 to 5 years. He's like, I was in Houston. I saw it with James and him having to get through postseason after postseason. And that guy, I get the sense that Capella sees Trey as his James Harden now, and that he's comfortable. They know where each other's going to be. They're simpatico in a lot of ways. And you can tell that that's just not the relationship he has with Collins. And the thing about that is Collins, man, he gets these guys, he keeps them engaged. He's more of a talker. He's more of a leader. He's more of an energized guy. He talks so much more on defense. He just, moving on from him is tough because I think the only way to even begin the conversation of a second star is he has to be on the table. Like Capella, I don't think is trade value. Like he's kind of locked into Atlanta anyway because they don't really have a choice. Now the awkward part is going to be like, if Onyeka Okongwu comes into next season with a jump shot, then it's like, Capella, you're playing 12 minutes a night, and like you're the rim running backup five now. You're full on Rashawn Holmes now, and I need you to delegate.
Or do you
yourself.
Stick him at the four?
Who at the four?
Onyeka Okongwu.
Oh no, no.
That's
we
a
can't
worse
put the spacing
Collins.
Would just be
probably.
I don't think we can handle that. And then just DeAndre Hunter. It's like, do teams see enough of his garbage time stats where they were like, oh, he's got that. He's got it in him. He can be a guy for us. We put him in our system, and we'll unlock that competitive drive. And he'll really take it. Like I wrote down, it was hilarious. Like how, because I was watching the local broadcast over the national one. Which game was it? Which was the game where it's already been so long? Where DeAndre had like 15 in the first. What game was that? Was it five?
That was game two, and then
he had another one where he had like 15
and then
or
he didn't score
first quarter.
A damn thing for the rest of the game.
Okay,
basically
I thought it was later than game two. I want to say I swear it was in Atlanta. Maybe it was game four. It might have been game four. But either way, he went ice cold and didn't do anything and was just getting his cardio in for the second and third quarter. And they were like, oh, he's still DeAndre. He did something and he missed like an open three. And they were, and Neek was like, ah, oh. And Rathburn was just, you could tell that they really want to talk DeAndre Hunter up, and they want to be like, man, who he was in the first quarter is who he's going to be. He's getting close to unlocking that over a four quarter stretch. And it's like, y'all can play that game all you want to. I don't want to, but it's also like, the Hawks getting a second star is going to come down to if teams like Utah want to rebuild, because our best asset is our picks. Like, that is the number one asset for Atlanta right now, is that Travis Schlenk has done a great job hoarding first round picks and hoarding his, he has not given up the kitchen sink. He still has those kind of assets. Reddish is gone though. Gallo's no asset. Bogey's no asset. Capella's no trade asset. It's DeAndre, I don't think, is much of a trade asset. It's Collins, and he just dealt with multiple injuries, and that was not a great way to end his year. I just am so curious to see how they approach this offseason, because I think they're going to be kind of constricted, because I think a lot of the guys they need to move for a bigger name, their trade value took a dip at the worst possible time.
Yeah. Yeah. You nailed it on the head. All these guys who we thought were some variation of asset, all of them are diminished this year, right? Like, who improved their stock this year? I would say
Trey.
I would say maybe Okongwu is the same.
I would say Okongwu is the one who increased his stock the most.
I don't know if his value is like astronomically higher than
also Bogey should be. Like, if you're a contender, Bogey, and like, you don't watch Bogey
15 games in a row, like, that's the problem. Is,
yes,
so I was thinking about this in terms of like, I thought about Anthony Davis and the Lakers. Like, if that became a thing that was possible, like, would, and the Lakers would want the type of guys we're willing to give up, right? They would want guys who can contribute now. They'd want John Collins and Bogey. I think Bogey would be a great fit with the Lakers. Does John Collins, Bogey, and I mean, I'm sure they'd ask for Hunter too. Like, did the three of them and then all the picks, like, does that get you Anthony Davis? I'm sure they can get better offers than that. And so you run into the, like, okay, they need a star. The picks are great. The picks also are going to be like late teens, early 20s for a while. And I think you're stuck in this situation where there is no single certified like stud asset, and that really holds you back in these discussions where other teams will come in with one of those guys. I don't know. The Hawks are kind of stuck.
Are they in danger of becoming what the that I know that the Hawks went on that, what was it, the second longest active streak of going to the playoffs or whatever, but they never made it out of the second round but once. And
the Joe Johnson, Josh,
the Smith. Joe Johnson, Josh Smith era, like Al whatever, Horford. Al Horford. Really, it's the Al Horford era, really, if we think about it. But I mean, I don't think that that's where we are. I still think that we can see improvement from a number of these guys. I'm not ready to cut bait, just completely cut bait. DeAndre Hunter stock went down, and like what I was saying earlier is like the. Of anybody who raised their stock on this team or actually got better this season, objectively, you have Onyeka Okongwu and you have Trae Young. Yeah. That's it. Nobody else got better this year, at least in our eyes. But at the same time, I'm not ready to cut bait on these guys unless of course there is a big fish on the table. But they're in a weird situation, and that's why Travis Schlenk is going to have to work something out. I don't know what he's going to do, but I think he's going to have to go get like a guy who's a smaller market guy. I don't think Anthony Davis is going to be a viable option. You're going to have, because Anthony Davis isn't going to be the number two on this team. Like, if you're going to get an Anthony Davis, you're going to get the Anthony Davis, and you're going to make him your number one. I don't think he's necessarily the guy that you want either, because you have a Clint Capella, and Clint Capella is going to be here to stay, and he's staying. And well, Anthony Capella Davis doesn't really do much for deal. I don't think they would want Clint Capella.
Think Capella's getting moved. I think Trey he's gonna be is probably. I guarantee you, there's like a conversation where Trey's like, "I want Capella here." Like,
but it's got to be a wing. You're getting a wing, or you're getting a ball handler. But you and those are the only two stars that you're trading for.
You have to have a conversation about maximizing assets, and we had this with Hunter and Reddish. We talked about this forever with Hunter and Reddish, and it turns out maybe neither of them is an asset. But we had this conversation about them, about how if you don't open up opportunities, you can't maximize their value. How we need to have that conversation with Okongwu too. Like, Trey might love Capella, and that's great, but you're really suppressing what Okongwu could be if you're not giving him a chance to take that over.
But I'm not even disagreeing with that. I just don't think it's realistic with the backstage politics. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. That's going to be a tough sell for a veteran like Capella. And if Capella has Trey's blessing, like, no, you're my starting five until
otherwise. Trey Young's also, we're running into dangerous situations where Trey Young doesn't dictate team moves.
Oh, are we sure about that?
Absolutely. No, because you see what happens when players dictate team moves. You run into the Brooklyn Nets and you run into the LA Lakers.
I mean, I'm not disagreeing that it backfires from time to time. What I'm saying is, are we sure it's Trae Young this summer?
The only time it doesn't backfire is when it's LeBron James, and then he leaves your team desolate as he moves on to his next.
He still won a title for Cleveland.
Yeah, it's also LeBron James.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, like,
I'm not tying everything that I do as an organization to what my star wants to do.
Regardless, I mean, I'm not disagreeing with any of that. What I am saying is, like, I don't know if that's actually how it works in the back, like, with the power brokers and Trey's also camp.
If Trae Young left, we'd be irrelevant. Like, that's
correct. Yeah, of course.
He has all the power. So if Trey's
you talk to Aaron Rodgers before you trade Davante Adams. I mean, it's the same thing, but it's like at the end of the day, it's like they still traded Davante Adams, you know? And because you got to do what's best for the organization. And if trading Clint Capella is what's best for the organization, regardless of what Trae Young desperately wants or whatever, you got to do it. Like, we'll what see. Max was saying, we got to let – if we think Onyeka Okongwu can take his game to the next level, but he needs more minutes, and if Clint Capella's in the way, you move Clint Capella.
We're also not even sure, is Trae going to sign off on being an off-ball guy and splitting up his usage? Like, is Trae going to be okay with – slipping down all NBA standings? Because if you bring in a Donovan Mitchell, that clouds his all-star stuff, that clouds his role, it clouds his impact.
You can convince him.
It's very simple. Yeah, if you go to Trey and say, hey man, like, we can get Donovan Mitchell, do you want to be third team all NBA or do you want to actually try to win a title?
Yeah, but what do you think Trey says?
Or you can be Steph Curry, who elevated his game to first ever unanimous MVP because he played off ball.
I think there's a real argument that it would actually increase Trey, like, efficiency wise, if he, because he's a caliber of shooter of, like, he could be a 40% three point shooter, just in terms of, like, if he took better shots. If he got easier looks and learned how to be a better catch and shoot 3-point shooter, like, it could help him.
Can I tell you my behind the scenes guess on what they do? I think Jordan Poole is who they trade for. I think Poole's played himself out of Golden State, and I think that's who they trade for.
There's no way in hell.
What are you going to trade?
There's no chance.
Then you're buying high on a guy who's probably already hit his ceiling.
No. Don't say
that.
His ceiling is best player of all time, so we haven't really seen that.
I'm going to say Jordan Poole is a Hawk next year.
You know, it could be fun. That could be fun. I will give you that, but
I would.
Who do you trade for?
I would live
who do you
in
trade
State
for
Farm Arena?
It's probably Onyeka, or DeAndre Hunter. One of those two are in the deal.
I don't think Golden State's letting Jordan Poole leave. I'm just going to say that right now.
They don't have a choice. They're already maxed out. His price tag is.
No, they don't. I've gone through it because I've also thought the same thing. Wiggins' deal is up after next year. So if they just hold off on the Poole extension, that's.
But what I'm saying is Poole is not going to sign off on that. He wants to get extended this summer. He's like,
you're
paying
Poole
me now.
After all that organization's done for him.
Yes, he's going to be like, pay me now.
Yeah, of course.
No chance.
Yeah. Those players want to get paid. They got to maximize their potential.
He does
potential.
Not care
he's,
one bit about.
He's like, not going to risk after the playoffs he's had this year.
I'll put
after the playoffs he's had. No, he's getting an extension.
The Terry Rozier thing, where he's like, no, I'm going to Charlotte and getting the bag. Like, I'm out of here.
Get that bag, man. Get that bag. I encourage him. Look, these guys. This guy has a.
Jordan Poole, Atlanta Hawk. You heard it
here first. There's no guarantee. There's no guarantee that he will ever be able to recreate what he did this year.
I would trade Trae for Jordan Poole.
You would trade who?
Trae Young for
Okay, that's enough. I mean,
ultimate heat check.
The Falcons.
How old is he, by the way?
So 22.
Poole?
Poole's 22?
Yes, sir.
Is he that young? Wow.
Yes.
Right. The defense with those two in the backcourt would just be absolute.
Awesome. Might as well trade for Donovan Mitchell. He's like a low end he's a poor man's Donovan Mitchell. But
I just don't know Donovan if I want Mitchell's my locker room leaders pool. Being Donovan Mitchell and Trae Young. I just
I'm with you on that. Actually,
can we just get Klay Thompson like 2.0, please, and just please.
That just scares me so much. Putting those two as your lead,
I'm with you on that. I think that's a real thing too.
Mm-hmm.
You know my prediction.
Mm.
My prediction is the big move is Rudy Gobert.
Oh,
big move.
I don't see that.
Speaking of chemistry, goodness gracious, can you like players around the league already get frustrated dealing with Trae on a night to night basis? If they have to deal with an in game of Rudy Gobert and Trae, oh my god.
See, that's the issue. The thing is, if we have we have Clint Capela, who's I'm not comparing their defensive prowess necessarily, but when you have a big man who is like a stud defensive big man, you still need some perimeter guys who can actually take some heat off of him. Clint Capela, I think if you add a better perimeter defender outside of just DeAndre Hunter or whoever else that we had, he's going to get instantly better. I mean, like Clint Capela still has another level that he can take his defensive prowess up to. I mean,
can
it's just
he?
When he has to. Yeah. It's just the way he moves and the way he has to defend players. It's I think. Yeah, but he's also not as big as Rudy Gobert.
No.
So we'll see.
I don't know. I think
I just think Clint Capela is going to be the center next year. I'd be surprised if he's not.
I mean, I agree with you on that front. Like that just clouds the Onyeka thing. That's why I'm just so curious to see how the summer is handled because
this is probably decisions. This is the most important summer. I think we said this on the podcast like in March or something.
We also said this last summer.
Yeah, well, this season also they upped the stakes a little bit.
Yes,
because they sucked.
Yeah, it upped it's it do just or because die. Yeah. This is do or die.
Yeah, this is do or die. This is either you live in mediocrity because you got your star finally.
Well, Trey's out if we have this kind of season next year. This is it. Like, this is the swan song for Trae. If we have the same kind of season next year, that's it for Trae. Trae's gone.
Didn't he just sign the Supermax?
Yeah, like, that doesn't matter.
I know it doesn't. I mean, like, what does it even mean?
Can we just do Trae for Zion now? Can we just go ahead and get a head start?
Dude, talk about leadership.
Would you want
Zion and Trae as your two leaders would be... Yeah, I would want Zion. Just putting that out there.
I mean, I want Zion, of course.
I would
be so good, but then you got to go get... If you get Zion Williamson, you need to go get like a Pat Bev, like what Max was saying. Like you need one of those.
Can we see Zion on the court
for
100 games yet? Like, can we just get there?
I'm taking the risk.
He doesn't want to be in Orleans. He just doesn't want to be in New Orleans, man.
I don't know. We'll see. Quickly on the Falcons, they take Drake London at 8. No, none of us had Drake London being the guy there. I thought it was gonna be Stingley, and then Stingley goes 3 to the Texans in a gigantic surprise, and. Right after us, big run on receivers. Every Ohio State guy goes Wilson, Olave, and then Jameson before he transferred to Bama, but original Ohio State guy. But I don't know. This was a shocker, and I don't know what Terry Fontenot and Arthur Blank have discussed about where they see the team year to year. Because I would love to get a real answer on where they like this pick does not make sense unless you think you can bounce back way faster than everyone else seems to think you can. I don't know. What do you think?
I disagree with that assessment. Okay. I think the fans are freaking out way too much about all of this. Like, first of all, the pick is whatever. Like, you know, the board shook the way it did. They took the best player on their board. I think Drake London's a really good player, and I think he's – I don't know if you've watched that much of his film, but, like, he's not the player that I thought he was when people –
I've seen a
like,
lot of Mike Evans comps.
Mike Evans, it's like –
he's
not
a,
he's
a
Evans.
Lot tougher than
he's
Mike
not
Evans,
Mike
though.
Evans. Like, he's more fluid. Like, he's – but he's also not as, like, physical. He played mostly in the slot until this past year. Point is, I think the fans are, like – There's no plan. I think there's more of a plan now than there has been in 5 years. Like, what are we even talking about? The plan is the teardown, and the teardown means tearing it down to the studs. And you know what? My friend texted me like, oh, at least we can tune out the Falcons for the next 24 months. No, I'm more motivated about the Falcons than I have been in years because they finally admitted like this. We're done with that era, and we're starting over. And you start over from a place of. You can build whatever you want. And so, you know, I'm not too pleased with, like, going receiver at 8 after you went receiver-ish last year at
four. Well, do you think they go receiver if Calvin Ridley doesn't get banned?
I don't know, but I also don't know if they go receiver if those corners or the top four edge guys are on the board. You know, like, yeah. I think it's just kind of how it shook out, and I don't begrudge them for that. Not over the moon about it, but I think there's a clear plan. The plan is to suck. The plan is to really, really suck. And guess what? That's going to put you in a good spot, because if you bring in a Bryce Young or CJ Stroud, let's say next year, and you have your quarterback, Kyle Pitts, Drake London, and Calvin Ridley is a great place, like a good infrastructure to put around that quarterback. And you can just build and build and build. And tonight's really important. Tonight is really, 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 really important. Yeah. But the plan is, all right, we have nothing. Let's build a foundation. And
I would rather just sign Charles Cross then. Just draft another tackle.
I'm with you. Well, but I think that's, I don't know. I don't know enough about Charles Cross to say, like,
I just want more of like, I just want the offensive line to be secure before we even address other skill talent or position. Like, I just, until we address that, and I'm like, we've got it. Like, whoever our next quarterback is walking into a situation where the offensive line is good and we are secure there. I don't know. I feel like it's just the wrong order of operations.
Well, there are other guys that we can draft. I mean, just because we didn't take somebody in the first round doesn't mean that's the thing that everybody freaked out. So I was up at Flowery Branch.
Four picks tonight.
We have four picks tonight.
Mm.
Prime picks in the top 82 selections. That's I think that's around the most at least for day two. I think
we have the three most selections, because one of those is going to be like Desmond Ridder or Malik Willis.
Maybe, actually, or maybe a Matt Corral.
I'm going to lose my mind if they're
right about that. I'm going to be pissed about it.
I'm not going to be thrilled irate. If they need to continue to build around the football. They're going to take, if they don't take two edge guys or two defensive line guys tonight, I will be upset. I'll be upset about that. But going back to Drake London, I think, Max, you were kind of going towards it where it's like they were completely tearing down and starting from the studs. And it's not a talent thing or anything like that. I think what they're trying to do, we talked about this with the Hawks, they're trying to change the mental makeup of this football team. And that was the thing that Terry Fontenot and Arthur Smith were talking about last night up at Flowery Branch. Like, he brings toughness. He's a dude who has the character of a guy that they want on this team. A guy who's going to punch you in the mouth if he needs to. And he's a big guy. He's a big target. He's versatile. He can do anything. He can go in motion, which is stuff that Arthur Smith really likes to do. But at the end of the day, it's his mental makeup. It's the thing that he's a guy that you can build around on offense. And that's just what they need. They didn't have any of that last year outside of a rookie in Kyle Pitts. And then Calvin Ridley is done. He is not going to be an Atlanta Falcon next year. I mean, he's gone. I've just already cut bait on him.
Well, I personally changed his key card, so we're good.
but look, at the end of the day, like they wanted to change the mental makeup of this football team. And I think they're trying to do that with a guy like Drake London. And they still have the ability to address tons of needs. I mean, look, Rome, I wrote about this last night. Rome was not built in a day. They have way too many needs on this team, and it's not a one-size-fits-all, so you might as well take the best player on your board who fills a significant need. You can still fill those other needs. I mean, look, you got like Zach Pascal, Enagbare, all these other guys, David Ojabo, all of these guys, you can fill the pass rushing needs. You can take two of them today. You can then go get like a Jamari Sawyer or something like that who can fill the offensive guard or maybe even slide out and play tackle. I mean, there's tons and tons of talent today. The Atlanta Falcons are going to get better today because they have that many holes. And then it's going to continue to open up next year, and they're going to get some free agency acquisitions, add some more depth and veteran leadership, and then they're going to hit the draft next year because they're going to suck this year. And then they're going to take a guy in the top five, whether that's a quarterback or maybe a Will Anderson or something, and they're going to be better next year. But I trust, like Max, like what you said, there is a vision here. You just got to trust the process. You got to let it unfold. People are overreacting to the whole sum of the NFL draft after one pick, and it blows my mind.
I also think if you squint hard enough, like, you can see the vision of what they want this offense to be. Like, I don't think it's beyond, like, you can see how they want this team to play. And, like, Arthur Smith built that entire Titans offense essentially around A.J. Brown and what he could do and how the way he threatened defenses. And I'm not saying Drake London's AJ Brown, like he's a different receiver, but like they want to be sort of a run first team, and you can see it on play action with your two versatile behemoth weapons who can catch anything, and you put stress on defenses that way, and like they're just gonna kind of keep adding to that. And like that is one compartmentalized part of the vision, right? But like you can see the philosophy behind it, and I think it's just so ridiculous. This rebuild is going to be a long rebuild if every single turn is like, well, what's the vision here? Like they're going to go 3-14 this year, and everyone's going to say is the worst GM and coach in franchise history. Well, just take a breath. Like,
wait till you're not.
If you don't have the capacity to like see through this rebuild, like take a break. Like, this year is going to be bad.
The Colts are also on CBS.
Look, also, people are undervaluing how freaking screwed this roster was when they walked into this.
100%.
They were in cap hell. They had been in cap hell for years. But the very worst, the only thing worse than being in cap hell is being in cap hell and sucking. This was a team that had lost had two consecutive losing seasons. Well, three consecutive losing seasons after the season they got fired. And then they brought in a new staff. Look, you got to rip it all out, and it's going to hurt. It's going to suck. But look, you just got to get through it. And I think that there is a vision. There is a vision.
Having said that, if they spend two of their four picks tonight on, like, Desmond Ridder and Kenneth Walker, like, I won't be happy about that.
No.
I think they're going running back either round two or round three. I would not be surprised if it's Walker or Hall.
I don't want to see running back. I really don't want to do that.
I just think it's going to happen.
If like, it's Walker, I'd be okay with it. If he falls to the third round, if I get him in the third, I'm fine with it. Just because he's a tough runner who fits what Arthur Smith wants to do. No, I agree.
Put Hall in the second round. I think that's I
Breece Hall.
Yeah, I think, but it's just such a waste. Like taking a running back now, if we're going to do the long rebuild, it's like by the time it's the Saquon Barkley thing where the Giants took Saquon.
Still doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, they took him, and the team wasn't ready. Like, they were going to be bad for a while. And it's like, you don't take Saquon when you're not, like, you take a Clyde Edwards-Helaire when you're the Chiefs, and you've already, like, you're just like, oh, we'll just throw him into the mix, and maybe he'll even get us to that next gear. That's when you take a running back in the first.
What's the point of having everywhere. A closer if you don't even get to it?
Correct. You know? That's what I'm saying. So it's like, I don't think there's any point in us drafting and burning running back years when there's only a couple before they fall apart anyway. So it's like there's no point if we're not contending and we're not really playing for anything. We don't need to draft running back anytime soon. Yeah, go ahead, Max.
I was just gonna say, if I can have one prediction for tonight, I think the Falcons trade Grady Jarrett tonight.
Ooh,
tonight's the night it happens.
I think they get like a late second or early third, and I think that's that. And we move on.
That's extremely depressing.
I think it's kind of weird. No one's really talking about that. Like I think it's borderline inevitable.
It feels that way. It kind of does. I could also see Debo Samuel getting traded today. That could also be a
realistic
thing.
I think they missed the boat. Like, the first round stuff was like the time to trade him.
He's not.
No, I'm saying, like, the Jets offered a big-time package for him in the first round. But now that the first round's passed, those picks aren't just available picks anymore. I don't think he's getting moved anymore. I think it's over. Like, I think if you were going to do it, you do it before round one. So that teams could take him and not.
If you trade Grady Jarrett, you're really, really committing to sucking next year.
What's the
difference? You're really committed.
Well, they don't have to commit. They're just going to be bad either way. Like, you don't have a choice.
Yeah. But the thing is, if you trade.
The option to trade him or extend him.
Yeah.
And those are. Yeah. There are costs for both of those, right? Like, that's not. Mm-hmm.
I just feel terrible about. Because
I don't want to get married to a bad contract. Not
he's
saying
not a
that
bad contract. That man's.
No, but I'm not saying that. Yeah. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is that this is a team that's going to suck for a while.
I would just like to suck and have Grady Jarrett. Like, can we?
He's a big leader for this team. He's a guy.
Thomas Dimitroff would pay Grady Jarrett. I'm just saying.
Thomas Dimitroff would pay Grady Jarrett $25 million or some ridiculous sum of money. I mean, it's
just because.
Hold on.
No, he would.
People are going too far now.
He did it. No, because he
the man put together a Super Bowl roster. He Thomas Dimitroff got a lot of crap.
Yeah, but
no,
but
give me some Thomas love because part of he got screwed with the salary cap changing. The salary cap going down significantly. That hurt him. He was not expecting that. The COVID stuff was a problem, but no. Thomas was still a great GM for a long time.
He built the roster
by
stacking a handful of super high-end players on the roster and hoping that they all stayed healthy and they're all in their prime. And that's a very like high-risk, high-reward proposition, and he got both of them, right?
Yes.
He got the reward, and now we are
where we are.
So we're reaping the reaping.
But if he gets that, if we don't collapse, if 23 doesn't happen,
no, it's just worth it. Yeah,
it's all worth it.
Yeah,
I don't think he was like a bad GM, but he definitely put us in this position.
Yeah, he definitely kicked the can too far down the road on Matt Ryan. He made too many mistakes. And look, there's a reason he's not in the NFL right now.
Well, it could be worse. You could be the Raiders, where they did not pick up the fifth-year option on any of their first-round picks from that year. That is insane.
Well, I mean, what is it, Clinton Farrell or whatever?
It's Farrell, Jacobs, and
but the year before it was Ruggs and Arnett.
Yes.
But then on top of, but we also have multiple drafts where not a single one of our guys that we picked is even in the NFL anymore. Like, we have that. The highs were high,
not
and the
that
lows
early,
were
that's
pretty damn low.
That's a lot of misses early. That's it. In one draft. Well, that's all I've got. Max has got to go. Garrett, thank you as always. Chief Chap ATL. Go listen to 99 Game if you're a local 99. Or you can listen on the app. You can listen anywhere. Max Markovich, you can find me on Twitter at Max_Markovich. Guys, we'll maybe be happier next week, depending on what the Falcons do over the weekend. I don't know. We'll see.
Ojabo at 43.
You have what?
Ojabo at 43, in case Terry's listening.
The Michigan stuff. The Michigan stuff. It never stops with you.
Stuff. It's not the Michigan stuff. He's going to be an elite pass rusher next year.
Can we just see him on the field? Max, Garrett, thank you as always, and I'll talk to you very soon. All right, that'll do it for this edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast. Thank you again to Max, to Garrett, to Nicole, to Ryan, to Ethan for all coming on this edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast. I greatly appreciate it. Hope you guys enjoyed the show as well. All kinds of great guests and all kinds of great content on this edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast, the Saturday, April 30th, 2022 edition. If you enjoyed today's show and you have not already done so, you know what I'm going to ask. Just go ahead and hit that pause button right now and leave this show a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or however you get your podcasts. It helps other people find the show and helps this show continue to grow. Also, go ahead and check us out on YouTube, youtube.com, The Chase Thomas Podcast. Hit that subscribe button. Never miss any of our video content. All kinds of great stuff on that front if you would prefer to watch any of our stuff. So, Chase Thomas Podcast right there. That easy, that simple. Go ahead and check that out today. Follow the professional podcast account, Pod Chase Thomas. That easy, that simple to remember. Just you type in the Chase Thomas Podcast on Twitter and you'll find it. But yeah, just go ahead and do that today. Email this very program at chasethomaspodcast@gmail.com. And that's all I've got for the moment. New episode tomorrow, per usual. And you guys have yourself a fun little Saturday. Uncle Derek, how'd I do?
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
Kayla Itzinas. I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.